Radio Prague News. The Czech Republic will have a new health minister on Friday. The Czech government has agreed to send prison personnel to The Hague, and Greenpeace activists are protesting against hazardous chemicals atop a 100-meter-high chimney. Czech President Václav Klaus has agreed to name David Rath the new health minister on Friday. This ends a battle between Prague Castle and Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, who failed to persuade the president to appoint Mr. Rath a fortnight ago. President Klaus then feared Mr. Rath's position as the head of a professional chamber representing doctors could pose a conflict of interest. Mr. Rath resigned from that post on Wednesday. The Czech government has agreed to send four Czech prison service members to join personnel at the UN prison in The Hague. The detention prison serves the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, or the ICTY. The Justice Ministry estimates total costs at around 7.6 million crowns a year. This may be twice the amount received by the ICTY, but will strengthen the country's prestige, the ministry says. The plan has yet to be approved by Parliament. A group of environmentalists have been protesting against the practices of a chemical plant in Moravia on top of its 100-meter-high chimney. The three men and one woman from the Czech branch of Greenpeace mounted the chimney on Tuesday morning, accusing the plant's management of producing dangerous chemicals that are hazardous to our health. The police have been called for assistance. Germany will most likely make use of the full 7-year transition period it is entitled to before it opens its borders to the free movement of labour from the newest EU member states. The governor of the German state of Saxony, Georg Milprat, told journalists in Prague on Wednesday that Germany's high unemployment rate and its inability to deal with the differences in salaries make it difficult to shorten the transition period. And 2 out of every 5 Czechs believe that EU membership has affected their lives more than necessary, the results of an opinion poll suggest. The poll conducted by the STEM agency also suggests that the number of Czechs sharing this opinion is growing. Besides the European Union, many Czechs believe ministers, deputies and senators also enjoy too much influence over the ordinary citizen. More power, on the other hand, should be given to trade unions and the local authorities. I'm Lisa Asiedu, and that's the end of the news.
You are tuned to Radio Prague, and I'm Daniela Lazarova. Coming up, 3 Nazi war criminals appear to be living a quiet life in Germany. Czech university students help Romani kids graduate from secondary school, and once a laughingstock, now one of Britain's most popular cars. The Škoda gains new respect. That and more coming up. Don't go away. The final days of World War II remain among the bloodiest that Czechs can remember, with countless atrocities against civilians committed by the Nazis, even as the Czechs rose up against them. In the Belchimov region, just days before the end of the war, German forces swept into the village of Leskovice, killing 25 people and razing the village to the ground. No one was ever punished for the atrocity. What's more, by a Czech investigative reporter, has reportedly shown that the man responsible for ordering the massacre, former SS officer Walter Hauck, is still living in Germany today, a free man. Jan Wellinger has the story.
TV reporter Standa Motel has long earned a reputation for being one of the most dogged investigative reporters on the Czech scene, to date uncovering the whereabouts of a number of wartime criminals, whose atrocities in the Czech lands have long been forgotten and gone unpunished. This week, 3 new cases came to light, including that of German SS officer Walter Hauck, said to have ordered the destruction of the village of Leskovice in the Czech Moravian Highlands. Czech police, prompted by Mr. Motel's work, have opened investigations into the wartime case and are looking into Mr. Hauck's whereabouts. The question is whether at this late date he can still be brought to trial. One man convinced Hauck should face justice at any cost is 88-year-old Stanislav Pech, a Leskovice native who took part in the Czech uprising, He was just 22 when Leskovice was destroyed on May 5th and 6th, 1945.
Začalo to tak asi kolem půl páté hodiny. No, my jsme se bránili.
It began at 4:30 in the afternoon on May the 5th. We had been fighting against the Germans and had taken refuge in nearby forests. But when fighting ended in the evening, some who had fled the village in terror returned, thinking the Germans had left and would not come back. But the Germans did return, with reinforcements, at 4 in the morning.
What happened next was something no one who survived could ever forget.
They began murdering civilians at the bottom of the village. One family, a husband, his wife and two daughters, were tied up with wire while their home was set on fire. They burned to death. Another person killed was 13-year-old Pepik Vaverka. Usually those who paid the highest price were those who said, "We didn't do anything."
Mr. Peck's own father was one of those murdered. He places the blame squarely on Hauk.
Hauk v Leskovicích nebyl. Hauk byl v Peřimově bývalém gymnáziu.
Hauk wasn't at Leskovice, but he put out the order for the massacre. We know a witness saw an underling report to Hauk afterwards, confirming his order was met. You ask about justice? All I can say is death for death. I can't say more.
Smrt za smrt. Víš, vám nemůžu říkat.
How the case develops and whether Czech justice will be able to get Mr. Hauk to court is now an open question. After the war, Hauk was sentenced to death for crimes in France, but his sentence was rescinded. It now seems unlikely that Hauk, today an elderly man of reportedly ill health, will ever have to answer for what happened at Leskovice, Czechoslovakia, in 1945.
This month, a new mentoring project will be launched in the Moravian capital, Brno, in which university students visit the homes of Roma schoolchildren to motivate them and help improve their grades. The Association of Roma in Moravia has earmarked some 350,000 crowns for the project, enough for free private tutorials until the end of next year. This report by Dita Siedu.
Michaela Cenková is a social worker in Brno. Her office is located in one of the city's worst districts, dubbed by most residents the Roma, or perhaps less kindly, Gypsy ghetto. The majority of Roma people in the city were born and raised there, so why are they among the poorest?
Když si vezmeme období před 89. rokem, tak lidé v...
Before 1989, Czechs did not have to worry about employment, housing, healthcare, and other necessities. The communist regime took care of everything for them. Suddenly, after 1989, people were left on their own. They found themselves faced with the task of finding a job, caring for their children, having a place to stay, and so on. The Roma community found it hard to adapt to this change and still fails to understand that the state will no longer give them what they fail to get themselves.
But those who do look for a job have little to offer. Only a fraction of the community has finished secondary school, is computer literate, or speaks a foreign language. In order to lead a better life, says Michaela, the Roma community will have to rethink its priorities. Several dozen students from Brno's Masaryk University will be paid to visit Roma families to act as mentors, help teenagers get into secondary school, and give them lessons to help them pass their graduation exams.
Only a small number of Roma integrate into the rest of society, mostly because education is very low on their list of priorities. This attitude is so deeply rooted because it is handed down from generation to generation. That's why we're hoping to persuade young Romanis of the value of education. The children will be motivated by the students because most of their parents can't even read or write. They do not care whether their child comes home with a bad grade. To them, other things such as caring for elderly or sick family members come first.
this is not the first such mentoring project. A few years ago, a similar but shorter-term project proved effective. The number of secondary school dropouts decreased, and some families even joined forces to convince others to accept help.
Details here do with that report. Now, have you heard the one about the Škoda, which beat all of Europe's best-known car manufacturers in a reader survey? Well, you have now. The days when Škoda was the laughing stock of the car world are, of course, well and truly over. But Škoda's reputation in Britain, one of Europe's biggest car markets, is going from strength to strength, according to the latest survey by the BBC's Top Gear magazine. Now, Rob Cameron has been looking into this story. So, Rob, tell us more about the survey.
Well, Daniela, I'm slightly biased because I own a Škoda Fabia, but I will tell you a bit more about it. It was carried out by Britain's Top Gear magazine, and car fans will be familiar with the BBC's Top Gear programme on TV. They asked 76,000 people to rate 159 cars, taking into consideration reliability, driving experience, dealer service and cost. They describe it as the UK's biggest car satisfaction survey, and Škoda did incredibly well. Only three European cars appeared in the top 10, and they were all Škodas. The Superb came fourth, Octavia came fifth, and the Fabia, he says with a note of pride, came ninth. All the other cars were Japanese.
Amazing. It's still rather surprising, though, isn't it? What about other European cars? What about Ford, Renault, Volkswagen?
Škoda beat them all. They beat Ford, Renault, Volkswagen, Porsche, even Mercedes. You name them, they beat them. In fact, French cars, for example, did disastrously, badly. The Peugeot 807 was voted the worst car, followed by the Peugeot 307, the Renault Espace and the Renault Laguna. Even Volkswagen only came 21st, Rover 22nd and Ford 25th.
Right, so who came first?
Well, as I say, Japanese cars swept the board. It was the sporty Honda S2000 that came first, followed by Lexus in second and third place, and with a scattering of Hondas and Subarus occupying the places that weren't taken by Škoda.
Mm-hmm. Well, is this really a success for the Czech Republic, though? Because Škoda is now a subsidiary of Volkswagen, after all.
That's right. Škoda is part of Volkswagen, and these results are as much a tribute to German engineering and technology as anything else. But the cars are made here by Czech workers in Czech factories with Czech managers, and Škoda is very much associated still with the Czech Republic.
Right. Finally, how much faith can we actually put in this survey? It's just one magazine in Britain, after all.
It is just one magazine in Britain, Daniela, but they did ask 76,000 people. It's an awful lot of people. When you consider, for example, that polling agencies in this country regularly produce political opinion polls based on a sample of just 700 or 1,000 people, and those polls are then reprinted ad nauseum in the newspapers and used to predict the outcome of general elections, the Top Gear survey seems rather more scientific. So in other words, what I'm saying is 76,000 car owners can't be wrong.
That's good to know. Most encouraging news. Thank you, Rob. A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, in today's edition of Panorama, presented by Brian Kennedy, you can meet graphic artist Jiří Votruba, whose work you may well be wearing without being aware of it.
If you've ever set foot in a Prague souvenir shop, then you know the work of Jiří, a painter and illustrator out of love, and a celebrated, yet somewhat reluctant, graphic designer by Providence. Votruba's work is seemingly everywhere. His often humorous images depicting the sights of the Czech capital and its most famous sons, in particular Franz Kafka, adorn postcards, t-shirts, and coffee mugs. We caught up with the artist this week in his studio to hear about his latest projects and began by asking him how he got his start.
I don't have art education. I'm in fact civil engineer and architect. And several years before the change of regime, I switched to art. I started as a painter, but just as a, it was just my hobby. My father, because we lived in the regime where everyone has to do his things himself. When we needed paintings, he made some paintings, but he was copying the important artworks. And so we had at home oil paints. And I started when I was maybe 18, 19. I found the beauty of these paints. And I made a first picture just copying a postcard. But since then I started making my own paintings, but not too many, maybe 3-4 a year. I was that time already at the university, and this was my great hobby. I paint in sort of cycles or series that are shorter and shorter. I'm changing, and I think it's responding to the time we live in. I think that painter always should reflect what is going around. And what I feel very strongly is the abrupt change of the regime in the country, and still we bear the consequences. Most of them are very beautiful, but some very peculiar, like the strong position of money, I would say, or consumption society that is also quite wild. And my last paintings, that is why I think look like pop art, which for American people must look old-fashioned, but I have to say that I'm in my pop art period. One friend of mine called it neopop. That sounds better.
In 1990, Yoshivo Truba was working for Albatross, the state-run publishing house for children. He founded a paper studio within that publishing house, which was making postcards and paper toys for children. But Yoshivo Truba was having difficulty getting his superiors to consider some of his ideas and illustrations. An old friend from the architectural faculty, Martin Vozirek, suggested he give him some designs, which he'd then print and try to sell.
And so I make 4 cards, 4 designs, and I gave it to him. And next 3 days I was walking through Old Town Square, and I'm looking into the shop window of the bookstore, and there were my cards on the wall. So it was a very interesting feeling. And he came next day, they are sold, you should do some more. And so this is how it started. And since then, Martin started using my design for a small company, Fun Explosive, that he founded. And I am working for Fun Explosive until now, and it's very visible. So the other things seem to be now in the background. But it's not completely like that.
Have you ever been abroad and seen someone wearing one of your T-shirts?
Yes, this happens to me quite often. The last example is Lisbon, where I have been for 4 days, and I met 3 pieces in the street.
Which pieces were they?
2 Franz Kafkas. And one was some flying figures. I think the intellectuals descending on Prague or something like that. That's earlier design that I'm today somewhere else.
What goes through your mind when you see?
It's a funny feeling, you know. Of course, I never would imagine merchandise Kafka before, because for me he was a holy person. And this commercial use was against my soul. But my friend persuaded me to try, and I made the first design, Franz Kafka walking in the street, and the sky is full of literature. And it seemed not to be so much attacking the Kafka spirit, so this is how it started. And I have to say that I know Kafka's life quite well, and I read all the books accessible. And last one was the memories of people who knew Kafka personally, like his maid and friends or girlfriend. That was very interesting, and I came to the conclusion that he perhaps would not be so much against.
The very first Czech course I took was Angličtina Express,
yes,
which was illustrated by you.
Yes, yes.
And I have to say, it was very friendly drawings that fooled me into thinking that Czech was a language I could learn properly.
Yes, it's nice to hear. I started with illustration much later. Maybe I made the first illustration something like 85 for a children's magazine. And then I started doing both things parallelly, and I added some graphic, and now I have to say that even I don't like it very much, the graphics takes over, because I have very interesting work in this field, so I'm sort of living a schizophrenic life in art.
Not the first artist to experience a bit of schizophrenia.
Yes.
I think just about everyone listening would know your work if they've visited Prague. Very simple but very distinctive images, and every, let's say, 10th t-shirt or coffee cup that tourists would take home has got some of your work on it. I'd very much like to ask you to describe what is it about these graphic works that makes them so distinctively yours, because immediately recognize, oh, this is Votruba's work, but I can't say what it is.
I think for me it's difficult too, because I haven't done it on purpose, but I know that it's a big victory for a graphic designer that he is recognizable. But again, I'm saying I didn't think of it much, but maybe it's the expression of my insight, the sense for humor. But from the formal point of view, I would say there is always thick black line, direct colors filling the spaces between the lines. I like using direct colors, and full surfaces. And maybe that makes the expression strong.
Jiří Votruba's latest projects include illustrations for the children's book Opera Nás Baví, We Enjoy Opera, and an animated projection for a festival in Japan celebrating the 250th anniversary of Mozart's birth. To learn more, have a look at his website, www.votruba.cz. And that edition of Panorama, presented by Brian Kennedy, has brought us to the end of today's program. Just a reminder that all our programs are available in text and sound at your convenience at www.radio.cz. Also, if you'd like to contact us about anything, then the email address is english@radio.cz. This is Daniela Lazarova saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha, vysílání Českého rozhlasu do zahraničí.